You're on the Crisis Hotline with Doc.
You're on the Crisis Hotline with Doc, and this is Angus, and we are reviewing today Dark Knight's Metal. Doc, how are you?
I am awesome, and I'm really happy to be finally doing the conclusion of the whole Dark Knight's saga. This is a good one.
Yeah, no, this is just absolutely mind-blowing, and we will get into the specifics here in a moment, but I want to give a little context here for those who have been loyal listeners of our Crisis series here. The reason that we've got both Dark Knight's Metal and Death Metal in the Crisis label is because they truly are that. Even though this is billed at the very beginning of this Dark Knight's Death Metal Deluxe Edition as an anti-Crisis event, which is most humorous, frankly, when reading that. And you definitely can see where Scott Snyder was going as far as how he wanted to frame this entire series. Now, Dark Knight's Death Metal, issue number 1, came out in August of 2020. So the last issue came in March of 2021, and that was issue number 7. Now, we read this compendium, if you will, this deluxe edition, which has just the core 7 in there. Now, Doc, I know you're going to get into the issues that led up to this event, as well as some surrounding contextual information. But just on its own, this event just is able to hold water. It's pretty amazing how you don't even need to, but I think it is helpful to have read Dark Knight's Metal to then get into Death Metal, because, you know, again, we're talking about this dark universe and this multiverse. And with that, Doc, I'd now like to hand it over to you to give the listeners a little bit of context and background on what this Dark Knight's Death Metal event was all about.
Yeah, Dark. This is. I think this is the pinnacle of crazy events with DC up to this time, and I think it's what's really amazing is besides the actual series itself being a really fun series and just really dives deep. It's like a love letter to DC at the same time as expanding DC and really really kind of bringing everything that to light about what makes DC such a great line of comic books and characters is kind of what leads up to it. This is like basically like a two to three year in the making for this event. This is Scott Snyder's like swan song for the DC. He pretty much left DC after this event, and he did a besides writing this the Dark Knight's Death Metal itself, he also did a 39 issue run on a Justice League. And he did some other stories here and there as well. So he kind of orchestrated this whole thing. And we see that, you know, besides, like, I'm going to go into some of the ones that lead up to Dark Knight's Death Metal. But besides that, it's like almost every title that was being written in DC, you know, somewhere around that 2018 to 2020 mark has somehow contributed a little bit to this whole event, this Dark Knight's in general. I'll just call it the Dark Knight's event in general. And that's what's so incredible about it. Now, do you have to read absolutely everything to get the feel for it? No, absolutely not. I do really highly recommend that Dark Knight's Metal, if you're going to read anything, I think Metal really does give a good context of everything, because there are a lot of things that Death Metal does pick up on that it kind of assumes that you read Metal. I wouldn't say it's dependent on enjoying Death Metal to read Metal, but I think it does help a lot with that. This goes back to, you agree? Because, you know, I know you read both, and that's all you read is the main series.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And I think that having at least a background of reading Metal gives you a perfect launch point here to get into death metal, because I think the uninitiated reader, although they'd be able to understand what was going on, would have quite a few questions if you were not familiar with the metal verse, if you will. So from that standpoint, you know, to see these new characters thrown in there, I mean, who you really wouldn't have known about Barbatos, for instance, if you hadn't read metal ahead of time. So from that standpoint, Doc, I agree with you wholeheartedly that reading metal and then going on and reading death metal is a nice good 1-2 punch. Oh, and by the way, all you need to do is read the core of both, frankly. Yeah. Now, I know before you gave a great background on all of the issues that help support the launch of the Dark Knights metal event, but I didn't read those, and yet I still absolutely loved that storyline. Now, I even loved more Dark Knights death metal because, Doc, as you were saying, with this being Scott Snyder's swan song, and for that matter, the teaming, the dynamic teaming of Snyder and Greg Capullo together, this is truly a celebration, culmination of their partnership here, both visually and some incredible rooted in story and reverence of DC history that Snyder brings to bear. And they said, you know what? If we're going to go out, we're going out with a bang. And boy, did they ever. And, you know, kudos to DC at the time. They did the exact same thing as far as treatment and promotion of death metal as they had done with metal, and even had an official soundtrack. Yes, now a second soundtrack come out and support this read. And I have to say, I enjoyed listening to the soundtrack while reading the graphic novel here. And it was a perfect pairing. And we were saying, you know, just prior here to going to recording, that any soundtrack that opens up with Mastodon on it, you know you're in for something different. And I really applaud the risks that were taken here by DC to properly support this artistic work, because it truly is that. There is nothing boring about it. And I am pleased that this work was allowed to happen, because, Doc, you and I have seen on too many occasions where creatives will get interfered with by management or the suits, and you get a half-baked or watered-down vision of what the creatives were ultimately trying to achieve. I truly feel in this that, man, they just let Capullo and Snyder do what they do. And frankly, from this reader, we're the much more better for it.
It was a well worth gamble that DC took, because I think they really did give us something really special here. That besides the event itself, just what it did for the entire DC universe in general and the DC line of comics, it really opened it up, which we'll talk about a little bit. And Snyder definitely is leaving DC in a much better position than when he entered. He had definitely had more of a struggle. Now, in the wake of him leaving, he's kind of opened up everything. So now it's writers have a lot more freedom when they're writing their stories and everything. And it's a pretty amazing thing with what they did. And I really commend DC for taking that chance. And honestly, to this day, we're like 4 years later. You can still feel echoes of this event through the DC universe. Like, things haven't, you know, it wasn't ignored, a year after, you know, like a lot of events and crises can be. It's like, okay, you know, that was 2 years ago. You know, let's move on from that. But you can still feel the reverberations from this event that have echoed through the years since it ended. And I really like that too about that DC. So you can tell that everybody was like 100% in on the editors and everybody, because this really is an event that is still around to this day. Even though they may not reference it directly, you can still feel those waves that came from it.
Yeah, Doc, I wholeheartedly endorse everything that you just shared there. And we'll just add this too. I think, you know, Snyder came in with a bang in the 2000s.
Yeah.
And, you know, he really didn't hit DC until I think somewhere around like 2006 or so.
Yeah.
But he was fortunate in his journey to cross paths with Jim Lee. And I think because of the sway and the ascension of Jim Lee through the ranks at DC in all the various different editorial creative capacities that he's had there, I think the fact that he and Lee connected and actually worked together on a couple things, if I'm not mistaken, really helped out Snyder in getting him on a good trajectory. And then when he and Capullo struck their creative relationship, oh my goodness, that was just spectacular. Absolutely spectacular. So, you know, we're good here with regard to Snyder, because, you know, the art and what I'm referring to with him teaming up with Jim Lee, if I'm not mistaken, it was Superman Unchained. Mm-hmm. And that was when Snyder wrote that new Superman series. And indeed, Jim Lee was part of that. So, you know, from there, I think there was a lot of comfort and credibility built up over time, trust that, okay, if Snyder and Capullo are on this, and oh, by the way, this stuff is selling well too, let's just go for it, because here's a prime opportunity for us as DC to shed our stodgy reputation. Now, mind you, Doc, that had happened well before this series, but I almost feel this is the culmination of DC saying, okay, look, we're in a new century now. Okay. Mm-hmm. The practices of the past where, I mean, you know, we've chronicled this on many an occasion here on Kirby's Kids of, you know, Jack Kirby, for crying out loud, his depiction of Superman being redrawn by somebody else because he wasn't meeting the style profile of DC at the time. Well, you know, all that is gone here. Okay. Mm-hmm. Not to say that there aren't standards and practices for DC, because the artwork still has to be good, it still has to be compelling. People still need to buy the comics. But I and I'll also attribute the late 80s and 90s and Vertigo and Karen Berger and the Berger books and everything that was developed there. DC over time evolved with the times and chose, from a competition standpoint, because they've always been and always will be in competition with Marvel. How can we distinguish ourselves from Marvel? And I think that DC consistently from the late 80s till now has done an incredible job of going darker and appealing to a more mature and darker fare. Mind you, there have been some exceptions in there too that Marvel's gotten into with Old Man Logan and things of that nature. Okay.
Yeah.
So I don't want to paint this thing in too broad of a stroke. But what I am trying to do here is, like you mentioned, praise DC for taking some chances here. And then, because through those chances, you then get a work like Dark Knight's Death Metal. Mm-hmm.
You can kind of see that attitude in even in the movies. You know, the Marvel movies are a little bit more lighthearted with a little bit more comedy injected, where the DC movies get criticized a lot for being so dark and brooding. And I agree, you know, it is not black and white. You know, DC is more dark and Marvel is more comedic. No, it's, you know, it's, that's silly to just generalize it like that. But generally speaking, in the same sense, yes, you do get that kind of split with, I mean, Batman is just naturally a darker character. Right. You know, you're not going to have, you know, you're never going to see Batman in a comic running around smiling and making jokes and, you know, like a Deadpool kind of like making jabs at people and stuff. It's just not, that's not who Batman is. But I agree with you that, that DC really did, I think, they did, and I think it was a conscious decision to try to, make a little bit more adult things. You know, they started that DC, the darker kind of comics that they have. It's an imprint, Black Label, the Black DC Label. Black Label. Yeah. And, you know, it's a little bit more of adult kind of themed and things like that. So, they, you know, they do go towards that. At the same time. This is the culmination. This event really is. And what I really like about it is, if you look back at like even the ones that we've talked about in Kirby's Kids, all the different crises always seem to want to limit the scope of the DC universe. You know, the right. Crisis on Infinite Earths, the original one that was trying to take all these different worlds and condense it into one big world. And then you see it again, kind of in Final Crisis again, and then when we get to the new 52, yeah, okay, all of a sudden, all right, we're going to expand it a little bit. There's 52 worlds out there, and you know, so it just like it switches back and forth. And then Snyder's like, "Why are we doing this? Why are we limiting ourselves? Let's embrace everything that every writer has ever done in DC, and this is how we're going to do it." And that's kind of what it, you know, the conclusion. And I don't think he was only set out to do that, but it definitely is a great thing that he did, I think, by opening up the DC universe.
Yeah, I agree, Doc. And I think by opening it up, but also at the same time containing it to this dark multiverse, yeah, that he's built out. And let me just give a little synopsis. We don't want to get into too much spoiler territory because this is a more recent work, and we would highly, highly encourage folks to read this because it is so different. It's so out there, if you will, and really takes some good risks. So humanity struggles to survive in a hellish landscape twisted beyond recognition, and Wonder Woman, Batman, and Superman. Okay, so look, we're now dealing with that holy trinity, if you will, of DC, okay, are trapped in nightmare worlds within the dark multiverse. It all comes down to the Darkest Knight versus Wonder Woman in the most metalist DC event of all time, paving the way for the future of the DC universe. So there's the stakes for folks, but at the same time, here is this incredible canvas. Then it was originally a blank canvas when Dark Knight's Metal came out, but then got filled up during that event. But now into Death Metal, this is like, you know, you're in a car, you just got off the line, and you're humming there at about, you know, 50 miles an hour. This is putting the pedal to the metal and just absolutely, you know, opening up the car to see exactly what all it can do creatively. And right, that is what you've got here in Snyder and Capullo, saying, okay, how crazy can we make this thing, but at the same time still have the essential components, the heart, soul, if you will, of these iconic DC characters come through.
I agree. And that's one of the important things, like we were saying earlier with, you know, why we think it's important to read Metal first, is because of things like the concept of the dark multiverse and even the Batman Who Laughs, which who's a huge part in Death Metal. He's introduced in Metal. And, you know, he is that dark version of if Bruce Wayne became the Joker. Which is, you know, it sounds like a cool little thought experiment, but it's really, when you really look at it, it's a horrifying possibility because it has that same kind of psychopath kind of calculating and will do anything to meet or, you know, achieve his ends. But now he has the money to do so because he's Bruce Wayne and he has that same kind of brain where you're always planning for the worst to happen. So everything is accounted for. So it's this merging of these two characters that it's just terrifying. And so that's what's important of, I think, Metal. And there's even a run I don't remember if Scott Snyder wrote it or not, but the Batman Who Laughs was a 12-issue run during this time that led up to the Dark Knight, Death Metal. Now, and again, that's not a really important one to read. It's a really fun one, but you don't really need that for Death Metal either. It just kind of explores the character a little bit more and just shows just what he is capable of doing, which is just horrifying in itself. It's a great story.
Yeah, and Doc, I think also important during this time was the fact that DC made a conscious effort marketing-wise and also content-wise that they would have an event called the Year of the Villain, which led up to actually Dark Knight's Death Metal coming out. So you had this featuring of all of these iconic villains throughout the DC multiverse having their own thematic books and stories happening, which then led up to this event. So that, I think, also piqued the interest of diehard DC readers to go, oh, wait a second here. You mean there's more? There's something beyond Dark Knight's metal? Yes, there's death metal. And Doc, when we're looking at death metal, I think an important character for folks to be aware of is Perpetua. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't think this is spoiling anything by talking in very general terms about the importance of Perpetua. I think Perpetua made a first appearance in Justice League Volume 4, Issue Number 8. And that would have been in November of 2018. The character was created by James Tynion IV and Mikhail Janin, which is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And this character is a pretty powerful character here for DC. And I thought this was a great add to, you know, this pantheon of iconic DC villains that we've come to, you know and loathe, if you will. So could you give us like a little bit of a background here on Perpetua and the importance of Perpetua? Because I think this will help readers as they're heading into death metal to better understand the gravity or significance of what Snyder was trying to do here story-wise.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Perpetua is a really, really great character. And she comes directly from the very ending of Metal. When they finally win, the heroes win and they defeat Barbados, they basically smash the source wall, which kind of imprisoned a lot. It was kind of like the boundary of the DC universe, and it protected the DC universe from, from all these external threats, and imprisoned within the source wall was Perpetua. I can't remember at the very end of Metal. It's been a while now. I can't remember if we see like part of her coming out of the source wall, but that's where she comes from. And then we see she comes into her own during the like you mentioned in Snyder's Justice League run. She is she's introduced there, and we gradually see her because she's weakened because she's been behind that source wall for so long. And then with the help of she kind of like. For lack of a better word, she bewitches Lex Luthor, and she uses him to help bring back her power. And that's what a lot of the Year of the Villain is, that she gives Lex these powers that he's never had before. And she says, you recruit all the, you know, basically says all the worst villains. Of course, she doesn't call them villains. You recruit all the worst of the DC universe, and I will give them upgrades to their powers, but they have to serve me. And they have to serve this notion of doom, which with a capital D. And this directly will lead into death metal. And that's what a lot of Year of the Villain is about, is just basically Lex and Perpetua kind of they're started off as teammates, you know, and they're teamed up together. And we have these kind of these different stages. Year of the Villain was a really big event. If you look at absolutely everything and all the tie-ins and all the crossovers and the main events and everything, it was what was it? It was well over 100 issues. I think over 150 issues total when it's all said and done. So it was a really huge event, and it was a really fun one. And we get to learn about Perpetua's her main goal of why originally she was imprisoned, which I won't go into. Like you said, it's kind of a newer series, and we don't want to give away too many spoilers. But that's what this series is about. It's basically recharging Perpetua up to who she was before. And just to give you an idea of her power, if you remember in DC mythology, you know, the creator of the universe, multiverse, is the Hand. And then we find out that there's a whole race of these beings. It's not just one of them. And Perpetua is actually part of that race of the Hands. And so that's how powerful she is. She is part of the creators of the multiverse / universe / omniverse, as it turns out. And that's basically, that's with her background. And then, and she just wants to recreate and re-image or reimagine the entire universe in her image. And she that's what she sets out to do. And to do that, of course, she has to destroy it first. And that's where Death Metal kind of starts to come in. And then we also see the Batman Who Laughs is kind of, he has his own goals and his own things that he wants to achieve on his own, and they team up for a little bit, and we go from there. But that's basically where Perpetua is. She comes from the end of Metal, and then we see her develop through Scott's or Snyder's Justice League, and then even more developed in Year of the Villain, and then she comes into her own in Death Metal.
Yeah, Doc, and great summary there, because this is huge. And what's interesting about her is on the other side of the coin here, you have the Quintessence, which are a group of the highest order of beings within the multiverse who bear witness to all events that did happen, are happening, and will happen. And that is an amazing group of DC characters. I mean, you have Hera, the High Father, Phantom Stranger, the Wizard, so think of Shazam, okay? The Spectre in there, and Genthet being the current members there. And
the most powerful of the powerful.
Yeah, exactly. So really, for Snyder here, and then to draw by Capullo, you're going hard into DC mythology. I mean, So yeah, a crisis event. Okay, you got multiverses things, but they're elevating this to mythological proportions and really diving hard into incorporating DC lore. Now, not only do they do that, but then, as we have, you know, known and loved about Scott Snyder, is a DC historian, as well as being a gifted writer. So on that huge level, and he's talking about a mythology here and going broad and massive, he then incorporates a character that, you know, yes, popular in its day, but who in the world has been clamoring for Sergeant Rock to come back? Well, Scott Snyder figured out a way here in the opening issue here of Death Metal to bring back good old Sergeant Rock, therefore also flexing his DC historical knowledge and making complete sense of the use of the character to kind of propel you as a reader into the story. And I just thought that was a masterstroke by him. I was so impressed by that.
You know what? To take that even one step further, yes, we had that Sergeant Rock. He's kind of the narrator of Death Metal. But then at the very end of the last issue, number 7 of Death Metal, how he connects with Sergeant Rock as the narrator of Death Metal with Hawkman, who was the narrator of Metal, and with how important his journal was, and how he connects all that together, and he makes it like this big loop. It was so incredible the way he did that. I forgot about that very end with Hawkman popping up, and I was blown away, because it was like, it just, of course, if you haven't read it, you're probably going to be like, what are they talking about? But it's such an incredible connection that he makes. It's just, he is such an amazing writer, and that's why I'm such a huge fan of James Tynion, because he learned how to craft stories from Scott Snyder, from working with him in their DC days, and it shows. I've read a ton of Tynion stuff, and he has the same kind of in his own right, though he's not imitating Scott Snyder, but he's got that same way to developing characters and really being able to tell a fantastic story. And Snyder is just incredible with like these little things, with these characters he brings in, because like you said, when it comes down to it, I don't think anybody knows, maybe even Geoff Johns. He may know even more about DC's history than Geoff Johns does, which says something. And both great writers in their own right, and they do a fantastic job. Snyder just blows you away with his, how deep he goes into some of these characters.
Yeah, I concur. So, Doc, where would we like to take this review next? Because as we are known to do in the reviews, if a work has been out there for decades, you know, we'll just spoil the, you know what.
Right.
But since this one is still, you know, it's a couple years old, three going on four.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I don't want to spoil this, but I think they're for bringing out the significance or the importance as to why this is a crisis event. What are the key takeaways as to, from an important standpoint, someone should read or would want to read Dark Knight's Death Metal?
So, what makes this a, first off, there's so many things. My mind is going in like 1,000 different directions of where to go with this question. It's not a standalone crisis event, first off. And I think that's what makes it so amazing. I'm not just talking about the connection with metal. I'm talking about connection with all the way back to the original Crisis on Infinite Earths. It connects all of the crises all together. And we learn that there's two different energies in the world. And it's basically crisis energy and anti-crisis energy. One of them unifies while the other one tears apart. And that's what's kind of established in Year of the Villains as well, with Perpetua, one and basically giving humanity the option. You can turn towards justice or you can turn towards doom. And humanity ends up choosing doom, which is more of this crisis energy that separates. And I think that's what I really enjoyed that too, because this is not being written in a void, as we've been saying the whole time. Snyder really does incorporate the previous crises, the main ones, you know, Crisis on Infinite Earths, Infinite Crisis, and Final Crisis, and we throw in and he sprinkles in some of the other ones as well. That these crises are the ones, this energy coming from these crises are energizing Perpetua and giving her power. So that's why I think what makes this so, I think it really makes it stand out is that it is really embracing all the previous crises and going beyond it and just going in another direction with it and really expanding on it as well. He doesn't rewrite any of the other previous crises. In fact, he embraces them wholeheartedly as for what they are. But he takes them and he shows how they were important and still are important in the DC universe to this point. But overall, with what we're getting here is that, you know, we kind of mentioned it earlier in this episode that, you know, past crises, they were looking to streamline and simplify the DCU. Crisis on Infinite Earths, like George Perez, they thought it got very confusing. Like, you know, Batman could have done this and this and X, Y, and Z. That doesn't make sense because of the timelines and everything. So they tried to, you know, erase some of it and just go down to this is, you know, one world again. Basically Snyder is doing the exact opposite. He's celebrating this complex history. And the idea that's, I think the first episode or issue of Dark Knight's Death Metal is everything matters or it all matters. And that's exactly what he's going for. Absolutely everything, by the end of this series, becomes canon. Anything that's ever been written about in the DC universe, movies, TV, cartoons, you name it, all the different comic books, it's all now relevant and it's all fair game and everything matters. And I think that was really, really cool. He creates an omniverse. So an omniverse is several different multiverses living, in one omniverse. So you think of like one multiverse is basically all the comic books and all the different variations. It's endless worlds in that multiverse. Another multiverse could be the TV and movies. That could be a whole separate multiverse by itself. And another multiverse would be the cartoons that DC has made. So it's like just absolutely everything counts now and everything is mattering. And I think that's what was really cool that he did. And that's how he changed it too, that it used to be that Earth was, you know, before Snyder ended with it, Earth was the center of the multiverse. We were kind of the anchor, where now there's two poles. Earth is one pole, our Earth, Earth Zero, and also Elseworld, which is a really interesting idea because Elseworld was something that was abandoned a while ago. That was, you know, that was an imprint of DC that they could write stories that were outside continuity and canon, just to put, like, mostly it was a lot of Batman stories that he, you know, when he was in the vampire world and different stuff like that. But now they have an Elseworld, and they really, I haven't really seen a revival of the Elseworld imprint. If anything, Elseworld kind of, in my opinion, it morphed into that Black Label, or the Dark Label. But you know, little things like, you know, Justice Society was reestablished as the original superhero group. And now what's really, fantastic, what he did at the end of Death Metal, is that all the heroes, they remember the world as it existed before Crisis on Infinite Earths. And they all remember what changed after Crisis of Infinite Earths and how it changed again during the New 52, et cetera, et cetera. So all the heroes remember all this now. And so it's, again, it's open for writers to just do a lot of, to have a lot of fun with. And I think since then, a lot of writers have had a lot of fun with this concept. And you see, I've seen some really great arcs, story arcs, and just comic runs that have really embraced this idea and have run with it.
Yeah, Doc, you're bringing up many good points here. I want to first touch on the Elseworlds label, and then really Elseworlds going from being a label to then now being a descriptive of anything that doesn't currently fit into accepted DC continuity. So, yeah. And we'll go back to your Snyder comment in a minute, because this is just an absolutely fascinating conversation to me. So you had Elseworlds blooming out of the Vertigo imprint, and Vertigo, you had a mixture of DC continuity along with pretty much some independent stories, and people were kind of scratching their head going, does this really fit into DC continuity or not? I mean, I remember when Sandman was first being published, many were scratching their head going, does this really fit into DC continuity? And now we found out, oh my gosh, yes,
it has,
it has been embraced. And I think part of that, and partial credit at least, needs to go to Scott Snyder and his entire movement here. And I'm gonna now finally call out what we had mentioned previously and we thought was a clever, you know, Death Metal and anti-crisis. Yeah, Doc, you just nailed it. The crisis event compacted everything together, brought the multiverse down into one universe. This, in Death Metal, not only are we talking multiverse and then omniverse, but we're talking about a dark multiverse that was underneath the surface of everything.
It's so always there.
Even further mind-blowing beyond that. So from that standpoint, this is an important work, if for nothing else, to let readers know, you know what, we know DC has been playing you like an accordion, you know, squishing you into one universe, expanding you out into a multiverse. Well, you know what? Really, folks, it's been in multiple multiverses and omniverse all along. And oh, by the way, here's a new entrant into all of this, this dark multiverse that has really been at the center of both Dark Knight's Metal and Death Metal.
Yeah, that's that's what I think is so astounding about it. And what makes it just so much fun is you know, like all these, even, you know, and something that we haven't mentioned, even this event and Snyder's run completely brings the Watchmen universe into the DC universe completely. And it is here now. It is here to stay, and it's not going anywhere. And it actually played a huge role I shouldn't say huge role, that's overstating it, but it definitely played a role in Death Metal with some of the energy with from Dr. Manhattan, his energy signature and stuff like that. And, you know, before, you know, it's almost like, you know, especially like after DC, you know, embraced the New 52 and they realized it wasn't going over as well as they thought, it kind of became almost like this, like the redheaded stepchild of DC Comics, and people were, you know, like kind of bashing it. And You know, they had to reevaluate everything, and they turned it around and they got rid of it. Whereas this is embracing it and saying New 52 happened. It happened. It was important, and it's still there. And a lot of the ideas are still there. And it's an important part of DC's history now. And that's another thing that Scott Snyder brings in, that it's not being ignored, that it is being recognized. And because, I mean, let's face it, that's Scott Snyder's, Batman run was during the New 52, and it was an amazing Batman run. He did a fantastic job with it. And so it's like, there was a lot of good that happened in New 52. It just didn't take, but now, all those stories are available, you know, if people wanted to expand on them or refer back to them or anything like that. So, something else I think we didn't really, mention a lot with Dark Knights, with Death Metal, is this is a Wonder Woman story, and that's what makes it so cool. You know, the first one obviously was Batman centric, and this one still has, obviously the Trinity, as you mentioned earlier, that play a big role. But this, when it comes right down to it, this is a Wonder Woman story, and it's a fantastic Wonder Woman story. So I really like that they focused on her as well.
Agreed. Particularly in this day and age where we've seen a positive trend in giving many more female superhero characters agency. It was George Perez, frankly, who infused Wonder Woman with an awful lot of her more modern agency. And then, you had Gail Simone, who would pick up the mantle too, and many others in between and up to the current day. But in the hands of Scott Snyder, she is a badass character here.
She is.
and just does an amazing job in the pages here of portraying a very confident, principled, grounded Wonder Woman who is fighting for all of these worlds throughout this epic saga. And it's only seven issues, but it reads like a saga. It's a huge credit to Snyder in very powerful economy of words to then also allow this mind-blowing art of Greg Capullo to shine. And Doc, I'd like to take some time here to get into some of the art of Greg Capullo, because that'll also give us the opportunity to dive into some of the characters that we like the best. And mind you, I think for you and I, hey, Wonder Woman's number one in this book. There's no doubt about it. Hands down, But what were some of the other characters that you really were drawn to in the book and that you felt were drawn well by Capullo? And where do you think the strengths within the artwork really began to shine for you?
One of my favorites, and I don't want to go too deep into it because it could be a little bit of a spoiler. I'm going to try to keep it as spoiler-free as I can, but the character that the Batman Who Laughs kind of evolved into, and I know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
And I absolutely, first off, we have like two evolutions. We have when he first evolved into this character, and then he took his own energy and he made himself look even more different. And the artwork for that was just so stunning. And what I loved about it was it was a very simple design. It was very minimalistic. It used a lot of dark, if not black colors, to really accent this character. And I really loved it because it was so foreboding, and it was just, when you looked at this character, you just got the look of pure evil. And that's exactly what Snyder and Capullo were going for, was this. And I think he just absolutely nailed it. I really love that character. And I absolutely loved seeing Superboy Prime again. That was when I remember the first time reading it. The original time when it came out, and Superboy Prime came on the scene, and I was like, that's the character we're missing in DC. I've always loved Superboy Prime, and especially after Infinite Earths or Infinite Crises. And those, I really liked the villains, really, when it came down to it. But the Wonder Woman, as far as the heroes go, blew me away. Absolutely. There were so many pages, like big splash pages of Wonder Woman, just looking powerful and godlike and just, you name it. I think we have a new era of Wonder Woman art that Capullo started, because he just took that character and he ran with her, and she just looked amazing in every panel that she was in.
Yeah, Capullo did an incredible job of showcasing her and really elevating her stature. I am most impressed with that, because sadly, historically in comics, being so male-centric, at least as it relates to superheroes, and not only in readership, but then also in creatives who were, you know, drawing and depicting everything.
Yeah.
Capullo took really good care of Wonder Woman and just placed her in another realm of respect. And I almost feel like, you know, anything now that happens within the DC multiverse, Wonder Woman's above it all. Meaning she's going to come down there, save the day, and make sense out of the chaos that is happening. And that is exquisitely depicted in these pages. Now, I also want to praise Capullo. And Capullo has always had an incredible talent in drawing horror in comics. Mm-hmm. I mean, we know his background in teaming up with Tom McFarlane and doing art for Spawn, okay, as well as doing countless other projects. But I just go to that because Capullo is extremely good at depicting dark and horrific scenes. And there are some depictions here, particularly when they're on the battlefield, and this is early on in the story, with Batman and all of these zombies, Doc, that Batman is commanding, these fallen in the battlefield, and Batman is calling to aid in the fight. Those are some incredible, not only action scenes and epic battles, but some awesome horror art in there. Just really, really good stuff. I mean, you know, it's one thing in a comic book to have some cutesy skeletons here and there, and, you know, maybe you've got, you know, some zombies thrown in, because as we all know, you start a trend and you've got everybody imitating it. So ever since The Walking Dead became the phenomenon that it was and is, you know, you got people throwing zombies into everything. But I think Capullo here, understanding the story beats being laid down by Snyder, does an incredible job. I mean, these guys are locked in as a creative team, and everything services the other on the pages beautifully. And there's not a page or panel that's out of balance, Doc.
No. I mean,
what's great about Snyder is that he will pause and allow Capullo, in just pure visual storytelling brilliance, to dominate a couple pages here and there. And for it to be silent between several panels, which I think is great. And it's not because he doesn't have anything to say, but more importantly, it's because Capullo's art is saying everything that needs to be said in that panel. And I think there's a huge distinction to be made between having something to say and then there being no need to say it because the visual storytelling is so powerful. And it's sad, Doc, that this is really the swan song for the both of them as a creative team.
And I know it is.
I'm going to miss them. I truly am. And I was late to this. And you were on top of it. And I remember you pinging me saying, hey, Angus, you need to read this. This series is amazing. I mean, you were the one who got me onto everything dealing with Watchmen coming back and now being incorporated into the fold. And while that was also happening, you know, Dark Knight's Metal was ramping up. And then you go into Death Metal and everything. But I'm glad we got this in this series, and I was finally able to read this because it's exquisite. If you were just an outsider, a traditionalist and consumer of DC, you might have balked at this one, going, wow, this just seems a little too out there, particularly when you were seeing the depiction of the Batman who laughs, and what are all these warped versions of Robin who looks like a goblin going on, and what is all that? Well, just put all of your preconceived notions aside, put all of the traditionalist, buttoned up DC notions to the side, and just open up your mind to taking this in, and you see just the absolute boundary pushing brilliance that is Dark Knight's death metal.
It's just one last thing about the art. These seven issues took me so long to get through because I kept, like, especially those big splash pages, like during like the last two issues in 6 and 7, when they were doing that really big battle, and like, all those different people who were resurrected, all the different heroes, and they're just in the background, and you just look, and it becomes like a almost like a, Where's Waldo kind of thing. But it's like, you keep finding these old characters that you're like, even some of them are like, I know who that is, but I can't remember their name because they haven't been around for so long. So it definitely took me a long time to read it. But I think you summarize it best. It really is. It's really an astounding series that, you could go into a lot of background for it. Also, as long as you read Metal, I think you're going to be fine with understanding everything that's going on. But if you really wanted to get deep into the lore of the whole death metal and Dark Knight's lore, there's a lot there that you can read, and it's worth it. Honestly, I think it's worth every single page. I haven't read a thing yet that Scott Snyder has written that I haven't really, really enjoyed. And this is, I think, a great culmination of it. And I think it's a perfect cherry on top with a little bit of whipped cream on his days at DC, and we miss him at DC, but he has gone on to do some really amazing things since then as well.